No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I am your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008 or Skype us your questions at BBS Radio 1. We're excited to have two very special guests this week. One of my colleagues, the Honorable Franklin Garcia, United States Representative for the District of Columbia, and later in the show, activist Eric Sanchez. We're excited to have them both, so I hope you will call in and join in the conversation. Again, the number is 888-628-6008, or Skype us your questions at BBS Radio 1. Before I get started, let me introduce my co-host Kathleen, who is somewhere in the heartland of America, no doubt making friends and causing trouble. Kathleen, are you there?
Yes, I am. And you're right, I am causing trouble. Two things. I went the other night to a boogie disco review here in Kansas City and on the Missouri side, and it was a blast. But the best thing is that, you know, I'm always comfortable if I'm in a city where I can get, like, find good tacos and a good burrito and maybe some chili verde. Well, I'm telling you, I did not know that Kansas City has a huge, large Mexican community. I went down to what they call Little Mexico and had some of the best tacos and enchiladas I've had in a long time. It was like home. And most of the audience know I come from the Mexican border, so this was unbelievable for me. And then I went into the grocery store called Price Chopper. They call it the Mexican Price Chopper. I went in there. I found nopalitos, which, for people who don't know, is a cactus that the Mexicans make, and it's really great for you. It's got iron, all that. And then I had tacos like my grandmother made, and they were playing the right music. And I mean, I'm happy. I'm a little Mexican in Kansas City of all places. You know, I can't believe it. So I'm a happy camper here in Kansas.
Let me tell you, I've had your tacos, and you make great tacos. So they must have been really, really good. Well, it's good that you brought that up, because we're going to have a very special guest in a second. But let me just first, since our show is dedicated to statehood, let me just give you an update on what's going on in statehood, in D.C. statehood. Nothing, really. We've got no new co-sponsors for the new Columbia Admission Act in either the House or the Senate. So we're still at 137-17 in the Senate and 120 in the House, and but we're going to start getting ready to push that now that we're past the July 4th recess.
Okay, well, let me get started with our show, since we have a really, really great show ahead of us. I'm going to introduce the U.S. Representative for the District of Columbia, Franklin Garcia. He was the former president and founder of the D.C. Latino Caucus and current president of the nonprofit D.C. Latino Leadership Council. He has held key positions in the campaigns of Hillary Clinton, former D.C. Mayor Adrian Fenty, Dominican President Leonel Fernandez, and other politicians. Representative Garcia serves on a number of boards and committees and served on the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington Host Committee. Representative Garcia came to live in D.C. with his parents and sister at the age of 10. He attended public schools in Montgomery County, and he graduated from Montgomery Blair High School. And you know what? Some of the best people we've had on our show all have this in common. You know what it is, Senator Brown?
They went to school in Montgomery County?
No, they went to American University.
Oh, no, not another
Representative Garcia went to American University, where is my alma mater, and is also your wife's. All the great people we've had on the show have gone to American University, just FYI. And so with that introduction, how are you doing, Representative Garcia?
I am fine. Thank you so much for sending the invite to be here. Very excited to be here. Thank you, Senator Brown and Ms. Gomez. Very, very happy to be here and give you an update and all the work that we're doing, not only on behalf of statehood, but also on this great demonstration we had last Thursday.
Exactly. That's why we wanted to talk to you about it. I mean, you know, one of my questions is, why did you want to do this? I understand you were the organizer behind this effort, correct?
One of the organizers, perhaps, you know, the main one, because I invited all the speakers and, you know, and that sort of thing and got the permit. But when we heard Donald Trump get on national stage, I mean, this gentleman is a demagogue who is using our community, using an entire community and paint them as rapists and criminals. And I just, we couldn't stand idle and let that take place. And as we saw the momentum going against him, we thought that it was natural for people in the city to say something, being that he has a plan to open a major hotel right here in our city. And so we thought that he was adequate to stage a demonstration against him. And as soon as I started calling people, everybody came to agreement, and that's how we made it happen.
Well, I got to tell you, Representative Garcia, even though you went to Montgomery Blair, I don't know if you know this about me, but I went to Wheaton High School. For those of you who don't know, they're rivals, football rivals in Montgomery County. But that was an amazing, amazing demonstration that you put on. I was really impressed, not only by the amount of people you got out there and the amount of coverage you had, but the types of people you had out there. You had people from the restaurant union. You had politicians from Maryland, from Virginia. You had LGBT activists. You had an Arlington County supervisor, Maryland senator, politicians from Washington. How did you coalesce all those people? How did you get them all there?
Well, you know, I think it's more because of the call to action. When anybody goes out on the national stage and hurts an entire community, I think as Americans, the right thing to do is denounce whoever does it. And so I think that it was, I did have, you know, a prior connection or contact or friendships with some of the, or relationships with some of these people, but it was really more the actual event in terms of it talking about denouncing somebody that is hurting a very important part of our society. And so I think it was natural for all of these people to come together and want to have a venue or some way to vent. So that's why you had members from the LGBT community, from the African-American community. Really, all communities were represented, people from the faith, the unions. They all came together because they felt that, you know, they had to be part in the bigger picture whenever you have any community being attacked the way Mr. Trump did and continues to do. I mean, just a couple of days ago, I think he went out to the West Coast and continue his rhetoric, his hatred speech. And, you know, I can't believe that people are taking this man serious. His whole platform is about undocumented immigrants. And so, you know, when people go to see a presidential candidate, they hope that they can hear somebody that can bring a lot of different issues to the table. And if you hear this man speak, at least when he went out there and spoke in Arizona, it was all about attacking undocumented people from Mexico, which is just insane. I cannot believe that people would stand for an hour, a little bit more than an hour, actually, and listen to this man go on a run, dehumanizing Mexican people who work incredibly hard in this country to make this country what it is.
And, you know, I'm from Arizona, Representative Garcia, and I have relatives, you know. I was born on the Mexican border. My father's Mexican, his family's Mexican, and Mexican-American. And basically, I've seen my family go down two sides. The Democrats, and there's a lot of Hispanics that once they make money, once they become accepted and become, you know, part of an influential community, have gone to the Republican side because they're very conservative. They believe in family tradition and the church and all that, which they feel the Republicans mostly represent them. But in Arizona, it's a very strange place. He did get, he got thousands of people there. My aunt is, you know, in charge of the Republican women, as Hispanic, as Mexican as you can get. But, you know, I don't believe she's for Donald Trump, but she is very Republican. And I think Arizona has a fear, you know, and Donald Trump does this. He's got the fear. You know, if you have a fear, he's going to play on it, whether you think Obama is not a U.S. citizen or whether you feel that all the people coming across the border are criminals. You know, he plays upon that fear, and that's what's going on in Arizona. It's a very complex, very, as you can imagine, you know, very emotional subject. And so he plays on the fears of people. And I think that's why he's so successful.
And, you know, it's the oldest thing in politics. I mean, right. This is the oldest thing. The oldest routine in politics is to scare people. And the things that he's saying about Mexican Americans, which are so untrue, have been said about minority groups for years. And the one thing, the point that you make, Franklin, is so right. So many people have come together on this. Look at all the people that have dumped them. Macy's has dumped them. NBC has dumped them. Univision, NASCAR, ESPN. His two celebrity chefs, Jose Andres and Jeffrey Zakarian, have both pulled their restaurants out of there. And New York is reviewing all their contracts they have with him. I mean, a lot of people have come to coalesce around this, and I think that's very hopeful. What do you think, Franklin? What do you think about that?
That's right, and we need to continue to add to that list that you just read. You know, there is currently, I know that in D.C., for example, I got contacted by the Latino Victory Project, headed by Ms. Eva Longoria, who wants to put out, has already put out, a petition asking the DNC to dump him, in other words, to not allow him to be a presidential candidate under the Republican ticket. And so, you know, what we need to do is we need to continue adding to this coalition of people who are saying no to Mr. Trump, because there really isn't any room for the kind of derogatory comments that this man is making. Our fear is that as he continues on this path, that radical groups are going to embrace the language that he is bringing or displaying, and are going to take action against innocent and decent immigrants that are part of our everyday lives. So that's why we, you know, a lot of people say, well, let him, you know, he'll fall. You're, you know, don't pay attention to this man. He's just trying to get attention. Well, you do pay attention to him because there are other people paying attention to him. I mean, currently he, in the polls, I think he's ahead of Bush right now. And so we need to pay attention to this man, because this man isn't going away, even if not as a serious presidential candidate. He'll be around. This man has a lot of wealth, a lot of power, and people who have that kind of traction, you know, won't go away. So we need to continue to add and ask others to come on board and continue to build pressure so that this man changes and tones down really his rhetoric.
I have a message. I'm sorry. I have a Skype message, and let me make sure that I put the number out there again. 888-627-6008 to call in with a question. But I have a Skype question from someone in Arizona who says, does this mean that the real issue that we have in the state of Arizona can't be talked about, that there are criminals coming across and using the system? Just talk to Mexican communities on the border. What do you have to say about that comment, Representative Garcia?
Well, here's what I say about that, and it not funny, but it's a coincidence that you should, you know, address that, because when I saw Mr. Trump address the people in Arizona, he actually brought out an African-American man who had his son killed by an undocumented person. And then he also mentioned the one incident that happened, I think it was last week, in San Francisco, where an undocumented person was also supposedly responsible for the death of a young woman. And, you know, what we say is this. Crime has to be addressed from whatever direction it comes. For you to paint an entire community based on one or two acts or whatever they did, it's wrong. It's not hitting the heart of the issue. I mean, we have communities in Baltimore City, Washington, D.C. at one time was considered to be the capital, the capital crime of our nation. And so we've had issues where crime has to be addressed. And so diverting the issue of crime and now basing it on undocumented people is insane. It's ludicrous. It makes no sense. I mean, this man whose son was killed could have been anybody. You know, he happened to have been an undocumented person. I don't know the circumstances he didn't elaborate, so I don't know what happened, how this incident happened. But really, it's a crime. Who commits it, you know, whether the guy was here undocumented or not, it's a crime that needs to be, you know, looked at in that term. And also, we know by looking at the statistics that undocumented people don't commit any more crimes than the average citizen. It's been documented. If anything, I think the numbers show the opposite. So, you know, yes, we need to address crimes in whatever color it comes. I don't think we need to tie it to undocumented people.
Well, you know, I think that you're absolutely right about that. And but I think the scary thing is that the fact that this man is doing so well in the polls shows that racism is alive and well in America. You know, I was horrified by you brought up the RNC. I was horrified by the fact that the head of the RNC asked him to tone it down instead of coming out and condemning him like he should. You know, it seems to me that the Republican establishment is saying to him, look, Donald, we really don't want people to know how we feel. You know, keep it quiet. Be cool about it. When they should be coming out and saying, you're wrong, this is wrong to you know, go after a whole community and lump them together and use the same rhetoric that's always been used. This guy talks in code. We know that. We saw that when he announced in June that he said things like, them, I'm going to help them, you know, they're going to vote for me, and I'm sure some of them are good people. We've heard this rhetoric before. We heard it during the civil rights movement. And I think it's sad and it's scary that people support this kind of fear-mongering. But while we're on the subject, I want to give a shout-out to the legislators in South Carolina that, in response to the tragedy at Emanuel Church, took down the Confederate battle flag, which only shows that even though racism is still alive, there are people that are willing to stand up against it. So I think that's a good sign. But I think you're right. You can't condemn a whole group of a whole population on the basis of what one or two people do.
I kind of like to bring this conversation back around to statehood. I mean, I think I find it absurd that this delegation, you have two senators and a representative, don't get funding to really do the kind of job that you guys have proved to have done, what, on Thursday? Fighting for equal rights and kind of, I guess, an equality-like-minded environment in D.C. where you don't want to put up with this kind of prejudice or discrimination. So I mean, you guys as a delegation, and I hate to use the word shadow because I think people don't quite get it because you are elected. I mean, Representative Garcia, how many votes did you get on this last year? This is your first term. So what was the amount of votes you got in November?
Over 120,000.
And I know that Senator Brown got 207,000 when he ran 2 years ago, and Strauss has always gotten in the same kind of thing, over 100,000. These are a lot of people voting for the delegation to represent them, and I just want to give a shout-out to you guys and to you, Representative Garcia, for doing what the citizens of the D.C. are asking you to do and doing it really well, as you showed on Thursday. And I think you guys should be a serious delegation where the city funds you and you're able to go out there and really give the citizens of the D.C. the rights that they need also. So I don't know. I just wanted to say that before we ended it, because I think that that's something that also has to look, be looked at. You guys are doing the job and you're not getting paid. And I just find that it's just a terrible situation.
Wonderful. Yeah. If I may just real quick, just go back to the RNC situation, you know, Senator Brown said that we've heard the rhetoric before, in the past. And we know that a lot of their presidential candidates have actually used it very recently. I mean, from, Mr. Huckabee to Rick Santorum. Last time around, we remember when Mr. Mitt Romney actually called on people to self-deport. So, the anti-immigrant rhetoric that we are hearing now isn't anything new to the Republican platform. I think the response we have from our community is the very low turnout in terms of voting from our community for their candidate. So that's, that's exactly what we expect to happen this time around. So as long as they continue to treat Hispanic voters the way they are, I think that they're continuing to see very low numbers of people voting for them. That simple.
Hey, we have
Let's hope that's true.
Somebody online, too. Taboo, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Hey, Taboo, how are you? Do you have a question?
Okay, great. Yeah, I have several questions, if I may. For Mr. Garcia, just wondering, do you feel that crossing the border is a crime? And I'm happy to hear you say it. I agree with you that, crime has to be dealt with. But I was just wondering, do you feel that a person crossing the border without proper documentation, is that a crime?
I do.
How should it be dealt with?
Well, that's exactly what I said in my statement. I do believe that community leaders, politicians, and others not only have a right, but an obligation to address the border issue, an obligation. And so, but we don't do it by getting out there and dehumanizing people. What we do is we have a serious discussion about this issue, and it has to be dealt with as grown-ups. Talking about immigration reform, whatever that is, there have been various bills introduced in both houses dealing with immigration reform, and the Republicans constantly and continuously have blocked it. But I do believe that the United States as a sovereign nation has the right to look after its border and protect the border to make sure that not only people like, from the South, from, South America who are coming over, but potentially other people who are going to inflict pain and danger in our country. It is important that
You already have laws in place. So why is it that that's what makes it a crime, because you break the law? Why then do you select not to enforce the law and use the laws? And
that's what's going on. I don't think that's what's going on. I think that Representative Garcia is right. Republicans stand in the way of these conservative Republicans stand in the way of us putting together a comprehensive and reasonable immigration plan, and then immigration legislation, and then they stand up and complain that nothing's being done and that people are breaking the law.
Senator Brown, there are laws already in place. That's what I'm saying. You're taking the point away from the question. The question is, you have laws already in place. You shouldn't have to reform something if you already have it formed. And that's what makes it illegal when you break a law. But
and
let me
interject there, because I understand what you're saying. Being on the Mexican border for the past 7 years, I've seen a lot of what's happened with, you know, illegal. And I think the issue is that there's so many that have immigrated or have come across illegally that you can't just turn 11 million people away. Their children are being born here. They are probably, a lot of them, more American and more patriotic than some of our, you know, third, fourth generation kids here in the United States. But I think this whole thing that Representative Garcia is talking about is that you're picking, you know, the Mexican community versus, you know, say the Cuban or the Spaniards or the Norwegian, that he specifically called the Mexican community rapists and murderers. And so the immigration issue is a huge issue, and it's very complex. And I think that really what we're talking about is just how this man who wants to run to president has sat and said terrible things about a community as a whole, you know, and not individually, but as a whole.
Well, and also, let me remind you, and I'm going to let Representative Garcia have the last word on this, but let me remind you that it was against the law after the 14th Amendment to the Constitution. African Americans were freed. They were given the right to vote, but more laws had to be passed almost 100 years later because they didn't vote. You could vote as an African American in an election well before 1964 and 1965. So the law doesn't always, you know, doesn't always work, Tebu.
Well, that's what we govern by. And see, right from the beginning, the American blacks, the African who came here, which became the African American, that was another issue. But for the Americans who were born here initially, that was what was supposed to be set up on a Republican form of government where they had it, but you had unjust government, and that has been our fight. But what I really want to ask was the question about what percentage of women are actually raped, because I think this is a horrible act that's being committed, and we really need to address it. I am not agreeing with Mr. Trump at all on how he said that, but there are some issues I think that really need to be looked at in what he's saying. You know how many, well, Mr. Garcia, you can probably tell me better, the number of women that are raped coming across the border. That is something that really needs to be addressed. And do we want the crime that's in Mexico? We are not addressing those issues. Mr. Trump is right on some issues, but the way he said this, it was definitely not proper.
Well, okay,
the issues,
thank you for
I think,
comment.
Behind that is what I think we should discuss.
Okay, we're going to let Franklin talk because he's only got a few more minutes. So
Ms. Gomez had it right. And so this is what happened. Back in the mid-80s, we looked at our immigration policy and we reformed the whole process. Well, what happened is that since mid-80s, 1985 to 87, our laws have somehow, you can say somebody's been dropping the ball. And so from 1985, 87 until today, you've got all kinds of people that have immigrated into this nation without their proper documentation, have made homes, have children here, you know, basically have an entire life. And you're saying now that, well, we have laws in the books. Why can't we follow them? Well, we could have followed them if we go back to 1987 and enforce them from there. But now that we've got this horrible issue of 11 to 12 million people who have livelihood here, who have children here, you can't simply say we're going to deport all these people. That's insane. It's non-practical if you think about it.
Well, that's absolutely right. And you know what, Representative Garcia, we're running out of time here, so I want to give you the opportunity to tell people how they can continue to get involved, because I know this is not the end for you in terms of this issue. And what can people do? Is there a website they can go to or some other way they can get involved in your cause?
Well, we've got a number of things going on. Obviously, as the U.S. Shadow Representative on behalf of the people in the District of Columbia, my main priority is to get adequate representation for the citizens of Washington, D.C. So that's my main call. I have a website that we keep people informed, and the website is www.dc51.us. Again, www.dc51.us. .us, and that's the place where I put the calendar of all the events that we have, on the issue of Mr. Trump, I don't see this going away. As I said, just this weekend, he's out there doing the same type, making the same type of comments. He made the undocumented people this time around look like criminals who came back in the 80s from Cuba. That's the analogy he used most recently over the weekend, saying that the prostitutes and criminals that Fidel Castro sent back in the early 80s are the same kinds of people that Mexico is sending to the United States, which we all know that people don't. Mexico is not sending anybody. People come out for various reasons, come into this country for various reasons. So I thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to address your audience, Senator Brown and Ms. Gomez. I'm very, very happy to be here, and anybody can contact me via the website. Or, you know, my information is there, my email and my phone numbers.
Well, thank you for standing up. And let me just say, and I don't say this often because it comes back to haunt me, but my best friend is a Mexican-American named Kathleen Gomez, and she's not a rapist, and she's not a criminal. And that's what I base my opinion on. So thank you for standing up for all the good American Mexican-Americans out there, and all the immigrants, and all the lovely people of Mexico. I've been to Mexico many times, and it's a wonderful place to go. We're going to take a break right now and bring on our other guests, but we're going to play a song, and I dedicate this to Representative Franklin Garcia for his efforts on behalf of the people of D.C. and also the immigrant population. Here's a oldie but goodie from Sam Cooke. We'll be back in a minute.
Well, we have with us now Eric Sanchez, who is a former press secretary to Congressman Tim Ryan of Ohio and currently does strategic communication for AFSCME, the country's largest union for government employees. Hello, Eric. How are you?
Hi. How are you doing today?
Really, really great. Well, it's great to have you on the show. I did some I Googled you and saw several things that you're doing that are just really interesting. We'll talk about some of that a little bit later. But you right now, you started a petition, right, that got someone very special out of the Trump Hotel?
That is correct. Before I start, I just want to mention, I actually I was with AFSCME up until about a month ago, and now I'm actually doing PR consulting on my own.
Well, fantastic.
I did spend 3.5 Absolutely. I did spend 3.5 great years with AFSCME and, you know, really great group of people. I have no more than the highest level of respect for the labor movement in general. But, yes, you know, I did actually a little bit over a week ago, two Fridays ago, I had started a petition. When I learned and started seeing some coverage about the fact that Chef Jose Andres had intended to open up a restaurant inside of the upcoming Donald Trump Hotel here in Washington. And, you know, over that weekend, I started that petition right before the 4th of July weekend, obviously one of the busiest holiday weekends of the year. So, you know, I anticipated that it'd be hard to get some support given that everyone had such busy holiday travel. And by about Sunday, 2 days into the petition, we had about 300 supporters. So, you know, once we hit that point, I issued a release out to some of the local writers that I'd worked with. And, you know, thanks to their help getting the word out, a few days after that, we were at a couple of thousand. And I believe it was Wednesday when Chef Andres ultimately made the decision that he would be withdrawing from Donald Trump's hotel.
Well, you know, I have to tell you, Eric, I was at the rally and I spoke and you spoke and you spoke eloquently about things. And I also want to mention that Chef Jeffrey Zakarian has also pulled out of the hotel. And what I find amazing about him is that he's going to lose a $490,000 non-refundable deposit. So this, you know, we always talk in politics about putting your money where your mouth is, and this guy certainly did
right.
that. He's about to lose $500,000, but he's standing up for a principle. So thank you so much for starting that petition. And are you still – how do people sign on? If they want to sign on to your petition, how do they do that?
You know, at this point, since we've reached victory, I'm not sure that at this point – I'm not sure how the platform – works exactly, but I think so you issue a victory statement on the Change website, and I believe at that point no one can no longer actually sign the petition. But I've kind of asked people, and kind of to your point of the hit that the chef is taking by making this decision, although it absolutely was the right one to make, and I'm sure that he agrees. I've asked people to basically convert their support to actually dedicating themselves to going on Chef Jose Andres' website at thinkfoodgroup.com, finding their favorite local restaurant, and committing to making a reservation. And I've actually consolidated that to a hashtag, which is hashtag Hooray Jose. And I've noticed that people have been making reservations, and they've been sure to tag the chef, just something to kind of show their support in terms of this difficult decision he had to make.
Well, you know, that's a great idea. It's a great idea. And that's us putting our money where our mouth is. Go ahead, Kathleen.
Exactly. And you know what? One thing I want to point out is that a lot of times, you know, I travel throughout the U.S., and one thing I hear is, you know, we can't make any difference. We can't make a change. It's politics is just too big. It's all these guys in D.C. They don't hear us. We give up. And I think what you, although, you know, people say, well, yeah, he's in D.C., he worked for a congressman. But I think what you did should speak to everyone that if you have something that really is bothering you, if you have to have a voice and you want to put it out there, to get involved and do it, because it's possible to change things by just starting with you. And I guess you, to me, you know, emulate that. And I hear so many defeated people out there in the public, whether it's for statehood for D.C. or whatever it may be. And I guess, can you kind of give people out there in our audience a little bit of a pep talk on that they can make a difference?
Obviously, a lot of cynicism out there. And it's hard to blame a lot of people, whether it's frustrations with government or, you know, the way that the process works and seeing things like the money that is spent in the political system, especially after Citizens United, it's easy to feel defeated. And it's easy, certainly, to certainly give up and turn off the TV and stop working. But at the same time, you know, when you do that, someone's going to understand where that new target is. And I feel like when we're talking about Donald Trump in particular, you know, and some of the messages that he has been spreading, he understands that the power of influence. And I feel like for him right now and some of the rhetoric that he's been using, he's really been kind of understanding the politics of fear and understanding that it's easier to scare someone than convince someone. And you know, with his whole language in terms of how he's been speaking about Mexican immigrants, I feel like he's been tapping into exactly that base, people who are easily scared and who can be moved emotionally just by hearing some of this language. And I feel like that's why he's doubled and tripled down. And there has to be an accountability on the other side. And whether it's something like this petition or, you know, other types of just grassroots type of motivators, you know, it's something that we have to do. It's our civic duty to just try our best to really encourage this type of citizenship and, you know, getting together and making a movement.
Well, and you, Eric, are a walking, talking example of what Kathleen just said. I mean, I've met you, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you don't appear to me to be a guy that's got $10 billion in the bank. But you stood up to this guy. You stood up to this guy who does supposedly have $10 billion in the bank, and you made a real difference. So, you know, it's obvious that one person that's committed with a good idea and is willing to follow through can really make a difference. Really done.
Absolutely. And you have to kind of just utilize your strengths and utilize the opportunity and see all this stuff through. And I think that anybody's capable of doing it. I have been fortunate enough, you know, over the years of my very short career to have kind of assembled, you know, a good group of friends that have been willing to help me amplify these things. So, but I feel like everyone definitely has that dynamic power to help enact change, whether or not they're elected. You know, just having, you know, the capability to have a simple one-on-one conversation and turn it into an echo chamber over time, I think certainly helps.
And just in case I was wrong, if you are worth $10 billion, I'd like to be included in that circle of friends. Ahead,
I would be happy with $10,000, you know.
Yeah, you and I both. Let me ask you something. What is your background? Is your background Cuban, Mexican-American, Dominican?
I am Mexican-American, yes.
All right, there we go. Another Mexican in the audience here. That's great.
Exactly.
And you were born in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, I was born in Washington, but I grew up in Northern Virginia. I went to high school at Oakden College at George Mason. So we're pretty relatively local. And right now, I live over in Eastern Market.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Now, listen, we're going to give you the opportunity to talk about anything that you want to, but I do have to ask you this when I was Googling you about, and this is this whole thing of being active. Can you explain to the audience how you're getting Kenny Loggins in your living room? Or that was your Kickstarter campaign, right? What is Kenny Loggins, you know?
We were amazed by that.
Yeah.
We're Kenny Loggins, you know, fans. That goes way back, and a young guy like you to be so into his music. So tell us a little bit about that, because I find that so amazing, and that just shows if you get committed, you want to do something, it's amazing what you can do with technology now.
Right. So in a more lighthearted project, I would say this was last year. I had learned a lot about the crowdfunding platform Kickstarter, and you know it was a tongue in cheek pursuit. But I put a project together when I learned that Kenny Loggins was crowdfunding for his next upcoming album with a new band he's been working with. So I did pretty much something similar. I put the project together, posted on my social media, and then I also took the time to kind of reach out to some of our local reporters and some entertainment reporters, and it also kind of took its own legs of its own in a very short period of time. So I think I was looking to raise $30,000 for that concert, and I offered through the Kickstarter page just individual seating opportunities to get to that point. And within 9 days, we hit that $30,000 mark. And in the first 5 days of the campaign, I was lucky enough to actually get an appearance on Jimmy Kimmel's late night show to talk about it. And then right after that happened, it was just kind of like the floodgates had opened, and we got to a point where things were really great and comfortable. So that show is actually happening in the fall in September. And I think that should be pretty exciting. But he's a really fun artist. I know that a lot of people recognize him for his work in movies and a lot of the movie soundtrack songs, Top Gun and Footloose and all those others. But I kind of grew an appreciation for him growing up. Like, that's the music that my parents listened to. Mm-hmm. And when I was doing that whole campaign, I was joking, like, you know, I really enjoy soft rock artists like him and Hall & Oates and others. And I joke that that's the music you hear when you go to your dentist's office. So during that whole campaign, I kind of joked that, like, my dentist was my DJ because of the music I would hear at my dentist's office.
Well, you know, I got to say, even though I'm sure I was hanging out with your parents at some point, but I actually saw Kenny and Loggins and Messina, who were actually the opening act This was when they were first really hitting the charts. They were the opening act for Fleetwood Mac at a concert here in D.C.
Oh, okay.
And they were amazing. They were just amazing. They were every bit as good as Fleetwood Mac. I mean, they blew us away. So I hope that concert does in fact happen. And maybe I'll get my walker out and dust it off, and you know, maybe we can come.
Yeah, you gotta pay, Mr. Cinder
Brown. Awesome.
Well, that's all right. I'll pay with all that money I'm gonna get from Donald Trump. Let me ask you, as a communications expert, and obviously you are an expert. You've done a lot of work in the communications field. What's the next thing that we need to do? And you can tell us either for statehood, which this show revolves around the idea of statehood, or to deal with
right.
Donald Trump. What do you think the next step for us is?
Well, I think in terms of statehood, first of all, I think we need another Democratic majority that's willing to address this. And you could say the same thing about immigration reform. I can't fathom in this current Congress in the way that it is. First of all, seeing anything pass, because it looks like that's that is rare and few between. But at the same time, it's just we have a great opportunity to include people, and whether it's statehood or when we talk about immigration reform. It's just an opportunity that we're kind of missing out on. You know, why wouldn't you want to have so many more folks having a say in the American civic process? With the immigration process the way we have it, we have an opportunity to tap into 11 million people. And I just feel like, unauthorized immigration is the way that Donald Trump sees it. He sees it from an enforcement angle. And, I understand that there are enforcement elements that you might need to place, but I feel like unauthorized immigration as we know it will only end when we change the way that we think about our immigration system as a whole, and I think that needs to be done through public policy. As for Donald Trump, I feel like he is attracting these big crowds. I know he had a big speech in Phoenix yesterday, but at the same time, it's like how much of this is the fact that his remarks have just kind of sensationalized himself to the point where he's completely dominated every media cycle. It's all anybody's talking about is the remarks that he's made, and I think that's why you're seeing these crowds come up in full force. And it's also the fact that he does carry a little bit of celebrity with him. The opportunity to see someone, will might have the chance to say something crazy for free. It's almost like getting a free comedy show. And I feel like if I had the opportunity to go see Donald Trump for free, I might take it, because I know that I would probably witness something hilarious. I just don't think that I know that some of the GOP strategists had Democratic plant because of the remarks that he's making, that it seems like, he understands how to fire up certain parts of that base, and he's climbed up the polls in New Hampshire. I think it's great that he's, in the race, for the sake of the progressives and everybody, mm-hmm. because at the end of the day, that this type of rhetoric, it's only really hurting his base. It's hurting the rest of the GOP field, but it's helping us. So by all means, I'm so happy to see Donald Trump in his race, and I hope that he continues to get taken seriously by the media, and that all this is going on, because I think it's only serving. And if it's any indication by this petition, by the other companies that are dropping him, I say give that man a microphone whenever he can get it and let him say whatever he wants to.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And I think that we've seen some of what you're talking about with the Republican National Committee telling him to tone it down, because they feel
right.
what you feel, and the only thing that's scary for me is this guy is not Joe the Plumber. He's actually a presidential candidate, so that worries me a little bit. But I think
right.
you're right. I think if you stand out of his way and continue to let him talk, that in the end, the American people will stand up. And I think we've seen some of that this week. We saw some of that not only with the big outpouring at the demonstration, and all these people who really are from mainstream America, people like Macy's and NBC dropping him. And I've also think we've seen great courage again with the people of South Carolina and the legislature who took down that symbol of racism.
Right.
Kathleen,
you
got anything
to
add?
Well, no, I just think that, you know, we need more people like Eric in on our statehood quest because, you know, the citizens of D.C. need to have equal rights, and taxation without representation is the basis of our democracy. So if we were to come to you, you have a PR campaign, so a PR business, right? You went on your own. And we would ask you, Eric, how do we get young people, especially, which I find these are the ones that are the hardest to get involved, young women between the age of 23, say, to 30, involved in this issue?
I think we just need to keep hammering home the benefits of statehood, what comes with it, what representation brings. I think it's just crazy that it's 2015 and D.C. hasn't been recognized at this point. Like, there's no reason why Senator Brown, you don't have an office in Hart or Dirksen or any of those Senate buildings. And it just needs to – we need to have it happen. And I think that some of the reason that it hasn't is because I think that there might be a majority in the GOP that realizes that if D.C. were to gain statehood, that this would be a solidly blue area. And, you know, it's more than that. It's just giving people a sense that they have, like, an ownership in this country, living here in D.C. And so I think just continuing to spread that message, hoping to get a majority in the House and the Senate to have the courage to realize that this is something that needs to be done, and really just continuing the advocacy that's happening. Obviously, if there's any way that I can step up and help, I will. And whoever we need to enlist in the project, then that's something that needs to get done. But, you know, hopefully next year, I think that the first thing we need to do is get everyone out to vote, you know, next year, and hopefully recapture the House and the Senate and start persuading both factions in a bipartisan manner to realize that this is something that needs to get wrapped up and needs to get done, and I would be happy to help join those ranks and forces in any way we can.
Well, that's great, and you know what? I think you're very right about that, Eric, and I got to tell you that when I talk to people like you, it gives me great hope for the future because, you know, us old geezers, we've been doing this for 200... I'm sorry. As an old geezer, along with the young and vivacious Kathleen Gomez, you know, we've been at this for 205 years, so we need to get longer than that, actually, 214 years. So we need to get more people like you involved, and it's great that you're willing to do that. And thank you so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely.
Thanks for starting the petition, because somebody needs to stand up to this bully. And I'm glad that you're willing to do that. And also, thanks for being an example to everybody about what one person with a good idea and a commitment can do, because I think you've accomplished a lot here. This is one thing this guy understands. I don't know if he understands race. I don't know if he understands politics. But I sure as hell know he understands money. And when we take money out of his pocket, I think that makes a big difference to him.
And
he needs to know that being an American is more than having a bad comb over and a big bank account. Go ahead, Kathleen.
Eric, just to give you a shout out, do you have a name for your company, or is there a way in which people can contact you?
Yeah, well, if anybody wants to get in touch with me, you can always find me on Twitter. The Twitter handle is at Eric M. Sanchez. That's E-R-I-C-K. M and Sanchez, S-A-N-C-H-E-Z.
Right.
Yeah. So while you're having dinner at one of the Jose Andres restaurants, think of ways you could bring this young man some business, because
yes,
he certainly deserves it.
Yes, and tweet out to him.
Thank you,
tweet
guys.
Out to him and Jose Andres, and maybe you can be the PR manager or do some work for him on the side. You never know. That's how it happens, yeah. Right?
We're just sucking up to you because we want to sponsor.
I appreciate it, guys. And, you know, even though that petition is over, I feel like the conversation just only started. So I hope that, you know, the three of us at some point can get together and brainstorm. And you know, I really would like to help out with this statehood pursuit. I think it's something that's absolutely important. And I feel like you got a lot of out-of-state people that live here that might not change their voter registration because they're just, you know, worried that it's a little bit devalued. So there's so many different perspectives, and I'd love to talk with you guys more about that.
Great. We'll do that. And thank you so much for being on our show. And thank you, America. We've run out of time. I'm going to let my favorite Mexican-American close us out.
All I can say is I'm happy in Kansas City with my nopalitos, my chorizo, and enchiladas. Great sauce here in Kansas City.
Okay, America. We'll see you next week.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.